All right, I want to issue a warning to everybody. Texas A&M threw an interception with 30 seconds left, and I was getting pretty tired. It was late on the East Coast, so I said, all right, fuck it. That's the game. Turned it off. Actually turned it to Notre Dame for a few minutes and then, you know, shut the TV off completely. Of course, that interception was overturned, and I woke up in the morning to check ESPN, and I saw, Ohio State, of course, there it is. Yep, Auburn. Oh, yeah, all right, Notre Dame hung on. It wasn't pretty. Texas A&M 74, LSU 72. Wait, did they also play in basketball? This is my message to everyone, which I should have known, is never, ever, ever, ever turn the game off. Not till the clock is double zero. Not till the team is kneeling. No, till the coaches are shaking hands in the center of the field, because that's the only time it's truly over.
It's really true. Every year we see it in college football. It was a fun Saturday.
Fellas, we're here for the championship weekend of college football, the biggest weekend all year, not counting postseason, of course. This is the one we wait for the whole year, and we got some surprises, we got some teams we definitely expected, and we're very excited to talk about it. We have a lot of fun on the show, guys, but once in a while we can get serious, and I've got some serious breakdowns and picks later in the show. Wow. I should probably introduce us. I'm Tom. I'm here via Skype with Dan and Ryan. Fellas, where do you want to start? You want to start with coaching news? You want to start with last week's games? We'll save the lines for later. We've got an action-packed show today.
We do. We got a lot to talk about, Tom. Okay, first of all, Michigan, you don't have the best defense in the country. You gave up 66 points. Once again, the Big Ten gets overrated. There's seven or eight defenses in the SEC that are better than Michigan's. That's the only real recap I have from last week. Alabama looked good in the second half. Auburn actually played really well, I thought, in the Iron Bowl overall. It just shows you how good Alabama is. They didn't make any horrible mistakes. They hung with them for a little bit in theory. But Alabama really, truly is that good. Clemson, similar thing, kind of fucked around in the beginning a little bit, but then pulled away. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Texas Oklahoma, so we'll talk about that. But coaching, I gotta pass the buck here. We're gonna talk about coaching. Go ahead, Mr.
So Ryan Spillett, it's time for a extended coach's corner. Go for it.
All right.
Introduce this. What we're going to do today. We talked about it last week, but for those who did not listen.
All right. So yeah, we always have a little fun. We like to rag on some of the bad coaches, whatever, but I decided this week I wanted to do a top eight, but for the most underrated / underappreciated coaches. We don't have a sponsor just yet, but we do have a name for this list. It is the Pat Hill Underappreciated Coach List, after former Fresno State coach Pat Hill, who would schedule anyone, anytime, always in a bowl. I love that guy. Great handlebar mustache. All right. So, Tom, coming in at number eight, a personal favorite of this podcast, Dana Holgorsen.
Oh, you mean future Texas Tech coach, Dana Holgorsen?
I think that's a step down for him. I mean, I know it's Texas and it's probably a step up, but it's not.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was being kind of facetious there. Like, you know, it doesn't really make sense.
No.
It is his home, so you never know with guys going home.
It's not him. You got to find out where is Dana's wife from.
Right.
That's the key, is where's the wife from? Where's her family? Because they're the ones that are going to help watch the kids when he's recruiting 40 weekends a year.
That's a good point. I don't know the answer, but, you know, those Texas folks, they don't normally marry outside the state.
That's true.
So, yeah, shout out to Dana Holgorsen. Through all the Red Bulls and all the iterations of the Phil Collins haircut, we've loved him for all the 8 years of Take the Points.
We have. And he's finally starting to just, you know, get his due now. But, you know, that guy's been a great coach for a while.
It's been a slow build at that program from, you know, pretty good or from good to pretty good to, you know, teetering on that upper echelon of college football now.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming in at number seven, the homer pick, Dino Babers. Again, another guy who's starting to get a little bit more national love, national attention. But that guy can coach his ass off. You know, he was at Baylor during the peak Baylor years, goes to Eastern Illinois, coaches up Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, what he's done at Syracuse with Dungy, who, you know, I've always said is a below average to average talent, and elevated him, you know, to what, like third team all ACC today. So Dino probably going to be leaving upstate sooner than later, but thank you for what you've done.
Like the three of us, he's gotten too big for upstate.
Correct. You gotta mail it in at some point.
Yeah, Dino, borderline not even underrated at this point after the last few weeks. I mean, candidate for USC potentially before they, you know, decided to stick with Clay. Probably going to be a candidate for many other jobs. I think it's just going to depend on what opens up and when, you know, whether he stays or goes. But his days are certainly numbered.
Correct. Another guy who probably will escape the cold sooner than later at number six, Jeff Collins, head coach at Temple.
Yes, for sure.
Not an easy program to recruit to coach at, to be successful consistently at. You know, that guy just puts up winning records every year, and you know, hats off to him. That guy has done a really, really good job, and he's super underrated.
Yeah, you have to hand it to the Temple administration, because a lot of schools can have a good coach who then goes on to a bigger program, but Temple's now done it. Well, he hasn't left yet, but assuming he leaves at some point, they've done it now twice in a row. And who was the coach? Was Adazio right before that? Are we talking three in a row now? So three in a row.
Three in a row. They just pump out coaches, man.
Yeah, so Adazio, Rule, and now Collins. And so something's going right in the administration there, where they keep bringing in talent and, you know, working them up to the next level. And if you're a mid-level school, that's what you have to do. I mean, you're not going to hold on to these guys forever. And if you do, it's usually a sign that they aren't that great. So congrats to Temple University.
Yeah, absolutely. And number five, it pains me to say it, but Kirk Ferentz, got to put him on the list. The guy just wins games. He wins between 8 and 9 games almost every year in the last like 5. And, you know, he's putting guys in the NFL. No one talks about him. We shouldn't, because they're kind of a fraud as a program. They're not a national contender necessarily. But look what happened to like Nebraska, Kansas State, you know, all the other schools in there in the Big Ten West besides basically Wisconsin and Northwestern. Like, that guy's been pretty consistent for a while now. And I just got to give it to him. Like, he doesn't really get a lot of love, but they're ranked every year. Every single year, Iowa's ranked.
Depending on what week you catch me, I may throw the challenge flag on that one, but I'm going to let it slide this week. Dan, do you want to weigh in on Kirk Ferentz? We've talked about him before.
Not really. I think that it's impossible to recruit to Iowa in 2018, to be honest with you. And I think that they could be more like Nebraska or a team like Indiana or Illinois that's in total shambles, but somehow Iowa holds it together, which I think is a valid point, because all the state schools around him suck. So I think that's a good argument on his behalf.
All right. Yeah. I mean, he's fine.
Okay. We'll stay with the Big Ten then. In the West, in the championship game, personal favorite of mine, Pat Fitzgerald, Northwestern. That dude just coaches his ass off. No one loves the school he coaches for, maybe more than him. That guy just like bleeds Northwestern purple through and through. And, you know, again, not an easy school to recruit to. Yes, your Chicago area, but the academic requirements at Northwestern are super, super high. Up until this past year, they didn't even have a practice facility. You know, now they have that beautiful, ridiculous one they have on the lake. That's going to just attract more and more talent to that program. And I think he's got them on the right track, you know, with facilities now.
Would you rather go to Northwestern or Illinois right now if you're from Chicago and a five-star recruit? Hats off to Fitzgerald.
Easy, easy question.
Yeah.
And yeah, the thing I'll say about Fitzgerald,
right. But
Fitzgerald is a coach that I really like. Northwestern's never been a powerhouse program, but in his time, he's kept them fairly competitive. They'll go, sometimes they'll be 6-6, 7-5, but they always seem to be bowl eligible, and sometimes they have a year like this year. Just named Big Ten Coach of the Year, so that says it all. And he's the type of guy, as you say, he's had offers from other schools. I think we'll never know the extent of it, but you know, word on the street is he could have been the Penn State head coach if he wanted to, and other programs as well. So I think if, you know, he were to take an offer like that, he's a playoff caliber coach. He could take a big school to the playoff, but he seems content and good for him.
Absolutely. All right. The top three. We're going out west to another really hard school to recruit for, really high academic standards, really consistent every year. David Shaw, Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
Personal favorite of this podcast. You know, that guy is just an awesome coach. He loves Stanford. Another guy who's had many, many offers, a lot of probably ones that were never reported. And, you know, he loves Stanford. You know, I think that guy's a great, great coach.
Yeah, he was also on the sort of alleged shortlist for USC before they decided to keep Helton just in the last week or so. And well-deserved, of course. You know, Stanford's another program like Northwestern that could easily just go 5-7 every year and no one would say anything. They'd be like, well, it's Stanford. They got a great robotics program, so they don't really need to be good at football. The Harvard of the West Coast. And yet,
I'm going to argue that he has the best coaching job in maybe all of sports, period. Because if you figure out, if you factor in the combination of low expectations, well-paying area of the country, you know, beautiful scenery, academics,
alumni
money, donations, investment opportunities in the area. I mean, if you've ever had the chance to visit that area and you see around the Bay Area and especially Stanford, Menlo Park, all that, I mean, come on, it's a no-brainer. Hats off to him. I don't think he's ever leaving. I think he might be a lifer and retire there, to be honest. And I think you should. And like you guys say, you know, they're going to this game against Cal with what is the record? 7-4. Who cares if they lose, they go 7-5? Nobody. So no pressure to him. Shaw's amazing. Hats off.
Totally agree. Totally agree with everything you both said. And I think there's a chance the NFL could come calling, but I don't see why he would leave for another college program.
Agreed. Agreed. Number two, also in the Pac-12, also was probably the favorite for the USC job had it opened, Kyle Whittingham.
Yes.
We've been riding them Utah Utes all year. We've been riding them Utah Utes for about the last maybe, 3 years or so on this podcast. We've been riding them pretty hard.
Forever.
That guy he can coach. You know, he can coach. If you've never been to Salt Lake City, if you've never been to the Utah campus, it's okay. It's not BYU. It's not built into mountains. It's just in Salt Lake. It's on the top of a mountain because Utah's all mountains. But it's nothing special. You know, I've been there 2 or 3 times to the Utah campus. So, you know, that guy he's a great coach. He brings in talent. He puts guys in the league. He adapts with the times, you know, consistently. I just think that guy is really super underrated.
Yeah. And another program, like we said, with Temple that had him, they produced Urban Meyer. So again, the program itself is doing something right.
I mean, just real quick, hats off to his coaching job this year. He's in the Pac-12 title game. His entire team and offense was all built around his returning quarterback and running back being the star two players. They both go out and they continue to win. Even last week against their rival BYU, they're down, what, 14 or 21 points early, come back to the game with their backups. And I mean, just A+. He is, I think he's number one myself, but continue on, please.
And under normal circumstances, Dan, totally, he would be number one. And he has been the number one favorite all year.
He's amazing.
However, number one has to go to one specific person because they didn't even have a freaking team 3 years ago. University of Alabama, Birmingham, Bill Clark. Bill Clark, if you're not familiar with him, is probably like the most famous high school football coach in the state of Alabama. That guy won like 150 games and like 8 losses in Alabama high school football, which produces all the Alabama and Auburn talent. And he's still getting his fair share and winning games, hasn't lost a home game since they brought the program back. And just, you have to give him the number one spot because, you know, they are in their conference title game and they didn't even have a program 3 years ago. And he came from high school, and what he's done and is just incredible. You know, so any other year, you know, I think Whittingham and Shaw would be 1 and 2, but man, this Bill Clark, what an unbelievable job he's done. It's not a big enough national story. And I think that's why he has to be the Pat Hill underrated coach of the year, Bill Clark.
You know, I joked that we were going to get serious, but that actually was a somewhat serious segment, and I like it. Congrats, Bill, on the research. I agree with all the picks. Congrats to Bill Clark, Whittingham. We're going to talk about those guys in a little bit.
Right now, actually.
Well, I want to break the serious tension before we get into the lines. I want to give Mr. Dan Partridge a minute or two to talk about Lane Kiffin, since he will not have a prominent game this week.
Yeah, the serious part of the podcast, here's a metaphor for you. If it's a plane, it crashed into the goddamn mountain, and that's where we're at right now. So Lane Kiffin, ladies and gentlemen, all right, let's recap Lane's last year. Last year, they blew out a bunch of teams. They won their conference. They went to a bowl, smashed in a bowl. This year, high expectations. Some people even thought they were going to beat Oklahoma to start the year. Maybe even us. There was an ESPN writer who said they'd finish the year in the top 10. They got blown out by Oklahoma. Never really went anywhere after that. So he's sitting here at 5-7 at the end of this year. He signed an extension at the end of last year, but that doesn't mean anything really. The most important thing is that Uncle Luke still says he'll pick him up at the airport to take him to Miami. So that just tells you that Lane is still held in high regard. Do not worry about this 1 year. He will shake it off. Next year, I feel a strong 8-3 plus season coming on for Lane. But yeah. And also, just quick coaching news. Ryan talked about the coach of UAB being an Alabama coaching legend. Made me think of one of our all-time favorites and mine, Art Briles, being a Texas legend. Hats off to Kendall Briles. Looks like he's going to be the new head coach at Texas State. So we're about 5 years away from Kendall Briles being the coach of a Power 5 team and returning full circle to the glory that was Baylor. So it's a good step for Take the Points, really. That's the way I'm looking at this. We're close for Kendall Briles. Couple more years away. We're just moving up jobs. We're jumping jobs.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it could come full circle. There have been rumors of Art Briles to Texas Tech to replace Cliff Kingsbury, which would not be a great decision.
I don't know.
By the way, just to add on to what Dan was saying about Lane, next year, first two games for FAU, at Ohio State, home versus Central Florida. He schedules anybody, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, Ohio State. Boom. Good for you, Lane.
Yeah, we love Lane on this show. We love the rat poison. One last bit of coaching news related to Lane's former job. Spill it. I want to commend you because you called it. Clay Helton, as we said, will be back as the USC coach, despite our objections and many others. However, he did exactly what you thought, which is he fired, four of the staff members are now gone. One left voluntarily, three fired, including T. Martin, who we thought could have been the USC head coach, who we really like better than Clay Helton. He's out. And now, allegedly going to visit the campus today, possible new offensive coordinator, Cliff Kingsbury.
It's possible. Cliff's getting a lot of NFL calls.
Cliff should. I mean, what he did at Texas Tech, given the talent and the other better teams surrounding him, I mean, I think he's a great coach. I think it would be, from his perspective, if he wanted to stay in college, it might not be that bad of an idea to be an offensive coordinator at a place like USC, given that we personally don't think Clay Helton is, going to last forever. And he might be in a position to take over there in a couple years. But you never know. But I wanted to give you a chance to say some kind words about T. Martin, who we have a feeling will bounce back.
Oh, yeah. T's going to be just fine. What he needs to do is go back to the SEC, to that part of the country where he still is held and respected in high regard, unlike that clown Clay Helton in Southern California. So I'd love to see maybe bring him back to Tennessee.
That's exactly what I was thinking. As Tennessee
coordinator, that would be an excellent hire. South Carolina could use an offensive coordinator. You know, Kentucky could use a guy with some innovation to match that close to elite level defense that they're building. So, you know, there's some spots that he could really do great, great things at.
How about Louisville?
He could be the head coach at Louisville.
Potentially.
In a second. Yeah.
I mean, I'm a Penn State fan, and I've said that we need a new offensive coordinator there. And T. Martin, Cliff Kingsbury, I'd welcome either of those guys with open arms, give you the $2 million, assistant max.
If Cliff goes to Penn State, I will buy a lot of gear and get all the way back on the bandwagon and pretend like I never left, just to let everybody know. But if that doesn't happen, I will continue the course I'm on.
It's unlikely, I would say, but it would be cool.
Well, okay, cool. Hook 'em.
Anyway, no more delaying. It's time.
Just real quick, I'm just...
Sorry, what I meant is more delaying.
One more delay is that you were talking about Notre Dame. I'm not impressed by Notre Dame. I know what I saw against USC. I know I don't care about the Syracuse win. Please, God, if you exist, just let them play Alabama one time so I can pay my rent just in one game. Alabama will beat them by 40 points if they play them. I mean,
all right, we're gonna get back to this, Dan.
So excited. I feel like Eddie Lacy's coming to town, not Santa.
We're gonna get back to this. I think your wish might come true.
Okay. All right. Are we ready Friday night?
We're ready. I want to start. Well, why don't we start wherever you guys want?
Friday night.
All right.
Northern Illinois versus SUNY Buffalo. SUNY Buffalo, 10-2. Northern Illinois, 7-5. UB Lane, 3.5. We'll say 3.5 for the pod. I just refer to the podcast as a pod. We should cancel it right there. Anyway, I'm taking UB. They've been putting up a lot of points. It's only 3.5. Northern Illinois has got 5 losses. Make it 6. UB, 11 wins. Why not? Any objections, you Buffalo Bills fans? I doubt it.
No, I'm all in. Buffalo's been smashing people this year, putting up about 40 points a game consistently. So, I like them to win the game, and I also kind of like a little bit on the over too. I think they can score 40 themselves.
There are a lot of lines I like this week, and this is one of them. I won't get into a detailed explanation since it's Buffalo, but yeah, I'm all in on Buffalo in this game, -3.5. Lay it.
Your detailed explanations, like, okay, so Andre Reed was an underrated receiver.
Khalil Mack has left a legacy.
There it is. All right. Next Friday night game, Pac-12 title game, Utah versus Washington. Washington laying 5 points, total of 45. For maybe the first time all year, Tom, let's kick it out to you to start out this Pac-12 game.
Yes, as someone who cannot stay up for any Pac-12 games, I have somehow seen a little bit in the last week, and I've done a lot of research, and I actually have a lot of thoughts on this one. So total, it's Washington minus 5 at the moment, opened around 3. I've seen it at 5. It's fluctuating depending on where you look. Total 44.5. These teams, as most people know, they played in September. Washington won 21-7. They held Utah to a season low 261 yards of offense. So, not Utah's best game. In fact, probably their worst game of the season. Since then, you mentioned Kyle Whittingham. Whittingham has changed their style. I read a long article about how he adapted and changed their style based on that loss. And, a little more of the passing game, a little more creative in the run game. Since then, they've won 7 of 8. So you got a real high-profile matchup. However, when I look at the numbers, it seems to me there is only one side to go with. And I don't know how much you guys are going to like this. But last six games, the University of Washington is 5-1 straight up, 3-3 against the spread. Sorry, that's the last six games against Utah, not of the season. So 5-1 straight up, last six against Utah. The only loss was Jake Browning's and Miles Gaskin's freshman year. As those two have matured together, they've beaten the Utes 3 straight, including this year. Against Utah, Gaskin's is doing great. He averages more than 100 yards per game. Browning's been efficient, though not outstanding. Most of these stats, by the way, are from the Salt Lake Tribune. So I went deep to the hometown paper.
I'm enjoying this. Keep going.
Sure. UW Washington defense allowing 16.5 points a game, which is 8th in the country. And given what's happened in the last few years of college football, to even hear 16.5 a game is like, it sounds like a misprint. You're like, did they mean 165? They've also allowed 121 rush yards a game, which is top 20 in the country. Utah, while they have improved in the past and made that a bigger part of their game, they're still a rushing team. Kyle Whittingham, this cracked me up. Kyle Whittingham's record against various coaches. His record all time against Nick Saban, Jim Harbaugh, and David Shaw combined is 5-1. His record against Chris Peterson is 1-5. So the one coach has his number. That includes Boise State games. But yeah, Chris Peterson seems to have his number. And then a little bit of trivia for you guys. So there have been 8 Pac-12 championship games since they started the championship game. 6 times it's been a rematch of earlier in the season. Of those 6 times, how many times do you think that the favorite, or, you know, what do you think the record is? You know, the person who won in the regular season versus the team that lost in the regular season when they meet again.
I'm going to say it's the exact opposite. 0-6 or 6-0, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Ryan?
2-4.
So that's what I would have thought, but it's actually, you guys are wrong. The team that won in the regular season has won 5 of the 6. And sometimes even more convincingly. The Pac-12 North has also won 6 of the last 7. So when you combine all that and the way Washington played against Washington State, shutting down that defense, unfortunately for us loving Utah and Whittingham, I think the way to lean in this game is the Washington Huskies. We also like Peterson, so, you know, it's not really that tough. But I'm all in on Washington in this game, and I also think you're going to see a little bit of a defensive struggle. So the under is a pretty low. The total is 44.5, which is a little low to me. But I think if you have to lean one way, I think you guys like the over. I think it's going to be under or right on.
I lean over slightly. You know, I think Washington played in a snowstorm last week, so they'll be excited to play in a little bit of weather, hopefully. But again, it could be snowing again in this game. Where the hell is this game at?
This is in Santa Clara at the 49ers Stadium.
I've never been an over in that stadium, no, ever. Exactly. Never mind. Scrap that. You're correct, Tom. Every year they have that stupid-ass college bowl game at that stadium, and it goes under. So here we go again. Under.
Yeah, that's a shitty field. It's horrible. It never goes over. It's never a fun, fast
track. Totally forgot. Game. My fault, America. Thanks for straightening me out, boys. That's all I got.
So that's all I got. I think I like Washington the best, but I think I like the under a little bit also.
All right. Ready to move on?
I'm taking the points.
Okay. Yeah, I figured.
So Washington, we'll see Michigan in the Rose Bowl, but we'll get to that.
No one cares about that game. All right, moving on to Saturday. UAB, the aforementioned, faces Middle Tennessee State in the conference championship game. Middle Tennessee State minus 1.5. I'm going to roll with UAB strictly on Ryan's argument earlier, and that's all I have to say about that.
Ride or die, Bill Clark. Let's do this. UAB, get some little tasty plus action on the money line. Do it.
All right. I don't like being this guy. I just went against your number two underrated coach, and now I'm going to go against your number one underrated coach. This is the fun scenario that happens a lot of times, especially in the smaller conferences where these teams just played last week. And Middle Tennessee won 27-3. So while I do think that this one will be closer, I think they still win and cover the 2.5. Middle Tennessee State, they're good. Third best team in the state of Tennessee.
They might be the best team in the state.
I'm going to put them third. For the record, you're thinking, well, UT and who else? Oh, no. It's Vandy, Memphis, Middle Tennessee State, UT, and then, like, whatever, Knoxville Technical College.
I think those are accurate rankings. I like those. Okay. Next title game, Memphis against Central Florida. Come on, Central Florida. I feel so bad for you guys. You got screwed all year in the polls. Now your quarterback goes down with a really, really nasty knee injury. I don't see how you can possibly wager on Central Florida here. I know there's that theory that if the quarterback's out, the rest of the team will rise up just for one game. So maybe this is the one game they rise up and then they get waxed in a bowl game. But Memphis can score some points. And I think that theory applies more to like a regular to slash a low scoring team, if that makes any sense. And since Memphis can just kind of score a lot in bunches, that could be problematic. But I like Memphis. I'll take them in the three.
I got some stats for you guys. The total, you know, reflecting Mackenzie Milton's injury, total for this game opened at 70, has already dropped to 64.5. We're recording on Tuesday, so that's pretty dramatic. UCF has actually won 12 straight against Memphis. So I think some of them being favored is this idea that they kind of own Memphis. However, as you know, the one this year was actually the closest of those 12, 31-30. And now Milton is out, as you said. So... I'm with you. I don't see how you can go any way but Memphis in this.
I like the over. I hope it keeps dropping like it is. That 31-30 game was played with some terrible, terrible weather. It poured rain in that game. So they still got up to 61. I know Milton's out, but UCF has a great system. Like Dan said, Memphis can score. They might put up 45 themselves. You know, Central Florida just needs to get to about 24, and I think they can do that. So, for me, I still like the over, and I hope it keeps dropping throughout the week.
If I were picking the total, I think I would also lean over. UCF looked okay with Milton out in the rest, you know, the second half of that game. They weren't horrible. Of course, they went on to win. But I think Memphis wins this one and breaks the streak. I think they win outright.
Okay. Moving on, Big 12 title game. This is a great game. This is fun. UT Horns, Oklahoma Sooners. This is who should be in the Big 12 title game every single year if college football had its way. Rematch from an epic game earlier this year where Texas had a lead and then held on as Oklahoma mounted a standard slash furious comeback. like announcers were like, well, it's over here. They're down 21 with the ball and 8 minutes to go.
Oh yeah, who in the Big 12 could possibly score 21 points in 8 minutes?
I know. Like, are you even it's not even close. So simply, I don't think that you can trust Oklahoma's defense at any point right now to lay more than a touchdown due to the fact that if a team's trailing by 14 against Oklahoma, a backdoor touchdown will cover the spread always. And their defense has been shown to be completely inefficient. They scored 2 defensive touchdowns last week, which people will say, well, you know, they gave up a lot of points, but those splash play turnovers offset it. Turnovers, for the most part, are pretty random and, you know, aren't something that happen over and over again. So my guess is, although people think Oklahoma is going to wax them this time, I think Texas scores on them all day. And I'm not saying that just because I want Texas to win. I really think that, like, you just can't trust Oklahoma's defense right now. So I don't know if Texas wins this game, but you can't lay it with Oklahoma. So once again, I'll take Texas plus 8 and over 78 all day.
Yeah, I just actually want to talk about the off-the-field lead-up to this game where Kyler Murray, after the original Texas-Oklahoma game this season, Ellinger, as is tradition, went to go meet and shake his hand, Murray's after the game, and Murray just basically walked away from him. Refused to acknowledge him and all that. And then, so this week, he was asked about that by a reporter and given the most, like, easy softball question ever. It was just like, hey, leading into this matchup with another young quarterback, you know, what do you think about Sam Ellinger? Do you respect him as an opponent and respect his game? Murray's response, I have no comment to that at all. He was just asked, do you respect your opponent?
Yeah, is there some kind of other history there that they're not mentioning?
Murray's a sore loser. He's a dick. He's a typical Oklahoma dick. Ellinger tried to shake his hand and congratulate him on a game, and he walked away. He was given a chance to just say, yes, I respect Sam. You know, I look forward to the competition. Easy softball question, and he gives the dick answer. So today, when reporters went to Sam Ellinger and said, this is what Kyler Murray said, you have any comment on that? Okay, cool, hook him.
It's catching on.
Yes, it is.
So now the quarterback has taken the lead of his head coach, and instead of saying no comment, he just says, okay, cool, hook him. And then he said, but to go on the record, yes, I respect Kyler Murray as an opponent. I think he's a tremendous player. I look forward to the competition. Gave the best answer ever both ways. So for that, I'm going to go with Texas because I just think Murray is a bit of a dick. I think he's going to crumble and blame his teammates when it matters the most. And I just really, I like Texas. I love that the way that they're just bonded as a team.
So cool. Just so, so fucking cool. And whenever you can ever make your way to Austin, Tom, just pick the weekend and I'll be there in a second to see these Horns in person. Oh, God. I'm so glad we're Texas fans now. It's great. What a good decision.
Good timing on our part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got in. We bought low.
We did. We knew they hit rock bottom. We're like, this is the time.
It's Texas. They're not going to be bad forever.
Impossible. Impossible.
And they were still, by the way, they had Chaz Strong and they were still like 7-5. So
have you been to Texas? It's so big. They're never going to be bad. It's impossible.
All right.
And speaking of that, congratulations, Mac Brown, former Texas coach going back to North Carolina to Chapel Hill. Good luck to you, Mac. I hope the game has not passed you by just yet.
Why not? Congrats, Mac. So let's see. I had thoughts. You guys covered most of the important stuff. The total 78. It's the Big 12, so obviously you cannot take the under. I guess the one thing I would add is that Texas, in their recent history, despite not being as great as they once were under, you know, Vince Young, Colt McCoy, They still have a pretty good history of covering against Oklahoma. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but like even in their down years, they still keep it close. So I'm with you guys. Take the points and potentially hook if you're feeling, you know, risque. By the way, can I say, like, I've seen a lot of chatter on this, you know, so-called Heisman race between Tua and Kyler Murray. Who are the people who think that Kyler Murray is better than Tua? Or am I just crazy?
There's a lot of anti-Alabama haters. People think it's a product of the system. And it's like, oh, you think
no, Tua's where have you been?
Okay, well, hold on a second. Let's do a comparison of Tua versus the last Alabama quarterback. And now let's compare Kyler Murray to the last Oklahoma quarterback. One won the Heisman. One can't really throw so much. So, therefore, Tua wins the Heisman, you fucking haters.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we could even go... No, I'm 100% on board. I could even go back further. So, yeah, Kyler Murray's not the best Oklahoma quarterback in the last 2 years. Meanwhile, Tua... Look at some of the guys who won a championship at Alabama. Greg McElroy, you know, went on to play for the Jets.
So good.
You know, now a broadcaster. AJ McCarron, still kicking around the league. Not on Buffalo, of course, because they're idiots. But, but you know, he's still playing.
Not good, by the way. McElroy could barely throw the football also. And then won a national title.
My point is these guys have won, like, pretty much every game they played in. They were, you know, he won a national championship. McCarron won two. Whatever that other guy's name was, he Sims. Won one.
Did Sims yeah. win
one? No, Sims lost.
Coker.
That was the Ohio State year. It was the guy after.
Coker.
Coker?
Jake Coker. Yeah, he won.
Jesus. How
they all won championships, and Tua is demonstrably better than all of them, and it's not even close. So, of course, he deserves the Heisman Trophy. As predicted, October 18th, 2017 on Take the Points. Check the tapes.
Wait till after it's announced before we do the College Football Bowl. But yeah.
I've never been happier for a guy who I don't really root for their team or have no affiliation with to win the Heisman.
An unknown backup. Well, before
not since Ty Detmer have I been so excited for a Heisman winner.
That's a good throwback there. All right, Mountain West title game, personal favorite. Fresno State travels to Boise again, and they try to beat this son-of-a-bitch Boise team that just has their number. The line's the same every time. It's Boise minus 2.5, spreads 50.5. This absolutely kills me. I don't like this Boise team. I like this Fresno State team, but I've seen Fresno go there twice they went there twice last year, no good. They went there, whatever, once this year, lost, same thing. Utah State last week, 2.5 points, same thing. How can you bet Fresno? You just can't. Just take Boise under 2.5, but I hope Fresno wins. That's all I got.
There's going to be a bit of weather here in this game, so I'm going to go ahead and take the under. Boise typically does play a lot of unders. Fresno's got a tremendous defense. This, to me, just feels like a, 23-17, 21-20 type of game. So, for me, under 50.5.
So, I agree with you. I think the under is the strongest bet, you know, if you're just going by the data and what makes sense. Dan, you nailed it last week completely, and then you nailed it, sort of reiterated what you said just now. My Utah State Aggies went up there. I thought they were going to take home the crown, but they lost, of course. I would take Fresno in this game on a neutral field. I would take Fresno if they were playing at home. I think Fresno's a better team. I thought Utah State was a better team. But you compared Boise to like Little Alabama, where when they're playing at home, something about that blue turf, they just can't be beat. And so I think you have to take Boise or you're kind of crazy.
And, you know, it's a perfect storm, too. I mean, when you talk about Fresno, they have all the motivation in the world. I mean, it's the same freaking players, same quarterback, Keyshawn Johnson Jr., wide receiver. They're all going back there again. It's like they got to win one of these, but I don't think so.
All right, moving on. Before we talk about the final three big championship games, Tom, you have some rando games to pick, so I'll let you go ahead and just list those off.
Yeah, I have a bunch, and I'm not going to really get into it, but I'll just make my picks quickly. So let's see. We covered UAB. We covered Buffalo. I like UL Lafayette to cover the 18.5 against Appalachian State. App State won the regular season game between the two by 10, and UL Lafayette has actually improved since then and gotten better. UL Lafayette 5-0 against the spread in their last five. And this is the first ever Sun Belt Championship game, which I think merits pointing out. They were the one conference that was holding out on us and never had a championship game. They would just have regular games like this last week. And they finally did it. And so I think both teams are going to be equally highly motivated. And so I'm looking at a pretty tight game. I think UL Lafayette covers. Marshall, +5 at Va-Tech. Spillett, you're going to hate me for this one. But Va-Tech, they won last week in dramatic fashion against Virginia. And they need this win to get to a bowl game to keep their streak alive. And everyone's just kind of penciling them in. Meanwhile, Marshall's had a pretty good year. And they've held strong against some teams. So I think, you know, if they can't win outright, I think they at least can keep it within a field goal. So I'll take Marshall in the points. NC State at home against ECU. I think this is one of those rescheduled games from earlier in the year. ECU is absolutely terrible, as we saw by them getting blown out by Cincinnati. NC State, we talked about it last week, pro quarterbacks putting up huge numbers against inferior opponents to impress the scouts. Great, great place for Ryan Finley to put up some huge numbers. NC State wins 55-21.
East Carolina with zero motivation to play this game. A rescheduled game after the season's supposed to be over. What a total waste of time.
Yeah, this one could get real ugly. And then the last one, we mentioned it, but I think this was before we actually started taping. It's hard to remember. Stanford at Cal. I like the under of 48.5. I think this is a very low-scoring game.
I actually like Cal in this game at home. I think they're one of the more underrated teams playing right now. And, you know, Cal, if they win this game, they get to 8 wins. If they win a bowl game, they get to 9, which is pretty good for how bad they've been and with their new coach and everything. That being said, keep an eye on them come about 3-4 weeks from now when they play in a bowl game. They'll be motivated. They'll be ready to play. Look for them in the bowl season, I think, to be quite good.
Yep. Love Cal's defense. This is going to be definitely a low-scoring game. You know, smart play is the under for sure. Probably, you know, a little bit taste on Cal as well since you're getting some points.
That's all I got. I think it's time for the big games. If you consider, you know, the 2.5 big games remaining. I'm not counting any game that features Pitt as a big game.
That's where you're wrong. The Pitt Panthers are one of the final six teams we're going to talk about. The Pittsburgh Panthers getting 27 in a title game. Clemson minus 27, total 53. Yeah, Pitt won recently at Clemson, if you remember, within the last couple of years. I don't think Clemson's forgotten about that. Clemson messed around last week in the first half and gave up some big plays on defense. Pitt is going to not score many points in this game. Pitt couldn't move the ball at Miami. They're not going to move the ball against Clemson. Maybe they'll score an early touchdown on a script, but after that, lockdown. This one should get ugly early. I like Clemson, and I like the under, too. I think 45-10 sounds good to me. Oh, that's the over. Well, 42-10. That sounds better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is just kind of a no-brainer. Clemson's been demolishing people recently. They're really peaking at the right time. They're not going to take their foot off the gas in this game just because it's Pitt and because the number is so big. You know, this is going to be a slaughter. This is going to be an absolute bloodbath. Pitt's going to try to take the air out of the ball as much as they can. You know, so I think the under is probably the smart play in this game.
So I tried to, because it's so many points in a championship game and Clemson presumably will not play hard for four quarters, especially if they're winning big and they're in the playoff and they don't want to risk people getting hurt or anything like that. You don't want to risk Trevor Lawrence getting, you know, smacked in the ribs or something. I tried to think of ways where Pitt would cover, backdoor cover, keep it close. And even with all that, it's just impossible to imagine. So I think you have to take Clemson. This of all the games is the like victory lap of all these teams playing. So I think you don't really have a choice in this one. Dan, I have a stat for you. As a Pittsburgh native, you'll like this one. The biggest odds of all the teams that have made it to this weekend to a championship game, their preseason odds to win their conference. Number three, UL Lafayette at the beginning of the season was a 30-1 odds to win the Sun Belt. Number two, Northwestern was 50-1 to win the Big Ten at the beginning of the season. And the number one team, obviously, is Pittsburgh. 80-1.
They don't 80. Know Pat Narduzzi.
80.
Well, unfortunately, the 80-1 still not coming in. You could have a sweet hedge opportunity if you had that ticket, though. But it's not going to happen.
Congrats to the ACC on easily surpassing the Big Ten and even the Pac-12 South as most lopsided divisions in any conference. I mean, you look at just the whole roster. If I didn't tell you who is in what division and you're like, what teams belong in this championship game? Well, Clemson, obviously. But after that, well, maybe they should play Syracuse. Nope. Sorry. Same division. Well, you know, Miami's all right. Nope. Not them. Well, Duke's been playing all right. Nope. Well, Wake Forest won by 52 last week. Nope. Pittsburgh, you're going like six or seven deep. Vautech's had an off year. Like, you really have to go deep to get to this one.
I don't know what you're talking about. This is the number one and two teams of the ACC playing. Don't worry about it. All right, here we go. Moving on to another bloodbath. Northwestern plays Ohio State on Saturday night. Ohio State laying a cool 14, total of 61. Northwestern, well-coached, hard-nosed, getting 14 against a team in a letdown spot, playing their biggest rival, playing their best game of the year. Urban Meyer's health, not 100%. 14 points sounds good. I'm going to tell you right now, Ohio State is scoring more than the total of this fucking game. It's 60.5. Urban's putting 66 on the board this Saturday. 66.
It's dropped. It's dropped, Dan. You can get it at 59 right now.
Okay. That's my – okay. I don't want to spoil my lock of the week. But it's Ohio State team total. But, no, Ohio State's going to score a billion points. We all know how this is going to go. Urban Meyer is going to run this shit all the way up. If there was ever a game in the history of his coaching career to run it up, this is literally the spot. He has to jump Oklahoma given Alabama wins the game. To do that, he has to win this game about 66-17 and hope Oklahoma either loses or wins a squeaker. He figures if they win by like 80 points over 2 weeks, they can't say no. And he's probably right, unfortunately. This 14 is just a total joke to me. I'm sorry. There's no reason to bet Northwestern here. I would love to hear an argument against it. We all know how this horror fucking movie works. This is like Ohio State college football 7. Like, oh, don't worry. This year we're safe. We're going to go on vacation out in the cabin. We're fine. Like, they lost by 50 to Iowa. No big deal. A team that loses to 50 to Iowa can't possibly – or not Iowa, Purdue this year. It doesn't matter, see? You don't know if it's Iowa.
Iowa, Purdue, Vautech, whatever. Dan, let me jump in there because the horror thing is perfect. I had all these, you know, stats and notes, and you basically took the words out of my mouth, so I'm not going to repeat it. If to use the horror house analogy, they're going to be just walking through and, oh, we're safe. This looks good. Hey, what's that picture? Oh, is that Cardale Jones?
Don't.
Dan, the parallels between this year and 2014 are just so clear to me. 2014 is when they lost to Virginia Tech. People thought they weren't in. As we all know, TCU and Baylor were ahead of them. And what did they do? You know, JT Barrett went out. Cardale Jones comes in. They beat Wisconsin 59-0. And because of that, of course, they cannot be denied that spot in the playoff, and then they go on to win it. Same shit's going to happen this year. I'm telling you guys, they're going to win this game. They are going to win this game like 65-14. And then not only will they jump Oklahoma, but Urban Meyer is going to be on every sports center arguing why they should be third ahead of Notre Dame in their weak ass schedule. So right. And this is my prediction, Dan, you're going to get your wish from earlier in the show. Ohio State's going to win this game by so much. They get up to third in the playoff ranking. Notre Dame drops to fourth, and we are going to get our long-awaited Alabama-Notre Dame smackdown, as well as a rematch of the famous Fiesta Bowl Clemson-Ohio State.
Mm, hopefully,
that I believe you guys went to, right?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah, that would be amazing. But anyway, unfortunately, Ryan, you got anything to add on this?
Feel free to make the case for Pat Fitzgerald.
No, but I will say I happen to be looking at an NFL mock draft today. First one I've looked at in a long time. And they had Dwayne Haskins at like 15 overall as the number two quarterback in the draft after Herbert.
Isn't he a sophomore?
I don't know. He's not an NFL quarterback, a first round pick this year right now. I clicked out of the article and never went back, but that just seemed like a joke to me.
Maybe redshirt sophomore, you can go.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, sure.
All right, no more mess.
Josh Allen seems okay, so he won't end up in Buffalo, hopefully.
Josh Allen looking good. Okay, here we go. Game of the week, game of the year. Simply the game of the year. There's nothing else to talk about. It's a game everyone's been waiting and hoping for. Georgia, Alabama, SEC title game, Atlanta, 4 o'clock Eastern, Bama minus 13, total 63.5. I'm going to let you guys start this one off. I'll go last if you don't mind.
Yeah, let me start with a simple one. My favorite bet in this game is the under. These two teams have great defenses. We saw this play out in the championship game. I know that Alabama's firing on all cylinders, but they also have a better defense. And so I think that it'll be relatively low scoring. Give me the under for sure. I'll let Ryan talk about the game.
Actually, I have zero feel for the over-under in this game. Not really sure what to expect, what style is going to kind of rise to the top in this game. If I had to pick what side, I probably would lean on the over. To be honest with you, just because Alabama has just been putting up so many crazy numbers and they're just taking so many shots and they just have playmakers everywhere. And Georgia, I feel, has been kind of holding some things back. I think they have some, you know, kitchen sink type things ready for them to kind of overcome some of the deficiencies they know Fromm has. I think Fields, not necessarily a Tua moment, but I think they're going to have some very, very specific packages for him to make sure. You know, that has been Nick Saban's Achilles heel at Alabama is a running quarterback. So I think Fields has an opportunity in this game. If they give him the chances and they let him throw a few balls too, just to keep Alabama honest, I think that could really change the dynamic of this game. If Fields plays, I think that they have a chance to keep this close, you know, within the two touchdowns. If he doesn't get enough packages, I think Alabama probably ends up rolling him a bit, you know, 38-17, you know, on an underside. But if Fields plays, like I hope he does, and Georgia comes out with a lot of trick plays and gadget stuff, all the things they've been practicing and saving all year, you know, I think they have a chance for this game to be like a 45-31 type of game.
Oh, see, I see the best Alabama case being what you said, like a 38-17 type of win. And for Georgia, I think their best shot at a victory is, you know, strong defense, you know, ground control with the real deal Holyfield, something like a, you know, 24-23, which still would fall under, which is why the under is the bet I like. In terms of the line, we all know the number one rule of the podcast. You bet on Alabama or you stay away. So I'm going to stay away. I think I guess I would bet Alabama if I had to, but probably would just take the under and no line. But I would like to leave the real analysis up to Mr. Dan Partridge.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. This is such a great game. Georgia last week played Georgia Tech, and it was the best Georgia looked all year. They finally looked like that team that knew that they were absolutely super elite. They knew that they were playing a team that wasn't as good as them. They were toying with them. They scored on every drive when they wanted to until they pulled the starters. That team last week looked as good as anybody has looked all year. I still remember how Georgia looked against Oklahoma last year, just being an unstoppable force, and how good they looked in the first half against Alabama last year, and even parts of the second half. There were some opportunities there. Like you said, I think everyone's been looking forward to this. I think Ryan's 100% right that Georgia's got some things in the bag for this game. I think a good storyline would be if Mr. Fields scored maybe 2 touchdowns or something like that. Could be like their Tua moment. I think Alabama, unfortunately, has not played a hard enough schedule this year. And I know I'm sounding like a hater, but I think LSU's way overvalued. I don't think they're anything more than 15th or 20th best team in the country. Mississippi State, I think, maybe is about the same. Auburn's probably 25th. It's not their fault, but they still have been absolutely unbelievable, and they've crushed everyone. However, you have to be very, very careful when you pick against Alabama. And, you know, there has to be certain factors at play. And the one factor usually has to be a mobile quarterback, or at least a quarterback who's playing really well. And last year for the Iron Bowl, you know, I thought that it was a perfect storm kind of for Auburn to win that game. I think it meant everything to them. I think just how things were going with Hurts, you know, not scoring enough points, that was pretty obvious at the time. As you head into this game, you take a look at, you know, how each team's been playing. And Alabama has been playing at the top of their game. And I think Georgia's playing at the top of their game. And I think Georgia's not that far off from Alabama. And to be totally honest with you, I think that we're going to have an SEC moment here. I think Georgia wins this game outright 32-29 somehow on Saturday, and we get Georgia and Alabama both in the playoff, and all hell breaks loose. But and then we get the real rematch potentially in the national title game. But I know it sucks. I hate picking against Alabama. Maybe I do it once a year, if that, and this is the 1 week. 13, I think, is way, way, way too high. Georgia's an extremely good team. Extremely good. Super talented all over the field. This will be by far the best team Alabama's played all year. Georgia will be ready. This game's in the Georgia Dome still. You know, don't forget that, even though it's split 50-50. I like Georgia somehow to win this game and all hell to break loose Saturday night. That's my prediction.
If that happens, then I don't want to hear like any of these ESPN guys trying to debate Alabama versus Ohio State versus Oklahoma. There's absolutely no question who the best team is out of those. It's Alabama, and they should be in regardless, win or lose.
And they will be. And that's
for sure.
Works out the best is you put those two in, Clemson and Notre Dame, unless you're Ohio State Notre Dame theory. If that happens and they leave out undefeated Notre Dame, hell will.
No. My Ohio State theory is contingent on Georgia losing earlier in the day.
But that would be an amazing Final Four, and I think that's what's best for college football. I think those are the best four teams, and I think leaving out Georgia isn't fair to them. You know, there's the argument saying, you know, maybe they should have been also undefeated going into this game. So, whatever. Moral story is, I just think the Alabama just hasn't played anyone like Georgia yet, and it might take them one game to kind of adjust, and I still think Alabama wins the national title, but I think for this one game, I think Georgia somehow gets it done, and the SEC gets 50% in the Final Four, like it should.
This is a 3:30 game, correct?
This is a 4 o'clock, the same thing.
Okay, so 4 o'clock, Ohio State plays at night, so if that were to occur, and the Ohio State players see that, then you can scrap everything we all just said about Ohio State, because they will have no motivation to show up. Because they'll know if Georgia wins this game, you know, before they kick off. then it changes everything in that game. I just want to add one last note that there were really, if you look back at the national championship game, which again, I think was a 7 or 8 point line. And that's another one where you called Georgia with the points and they honestly should have won outright. If not for that damn Tua. But yeah, there were two reasons Georgia lost that game. One obviously was Tua, the greatest player in college football, showing up in the second half and putting on a show. The other one was that they just got so conservative with their coaching in the second half. They basically played not to lose. There's nothing you can do about Tua, but I don't think Kirby Smart would make that same mistake again. You know, he's a good coach, so that's the one thing they can control for. So, you know, that's why I'm hesitant to pick a side in this, because I do think Georgia definitely has the potential, and if they play it right, and if Kirby Smart coaches to win and not to lose, if he takes some advice from Mr. Herm Edwards, then I think they definitely have potential to win outright and certainly cover. But I'm not betting against Tua. Sorry, Dan.
Hey, it happens. Maybe once a year. That's all it is.
All right. All we really want is Alabama Notre Dame.
Yeah, please.
In the first round of the playoff. That really is our Christmas wish.
Imagine somehow if I don't know if the rankings could work out where Alabama can play against Notre Dame the first game after losing to Georgia. Oh my God, they'll beat them by 55 points.
If Georgia beats Alabama, then Georgia has to be ranked higher, right? So Clemson goes to 1.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it happens, right? Because it would have to be
3. Georgia, 4 Alabama. Would it be Clemson?
Alabama? No, because Clemson's definitely going to be the 1. So if Alabama drops to 4, they play Clemson. If they drop to 3, that means Georgia has to be the 2.
Notre Dame 2, Alabama 3, Georgia 4.
Listen, I don't know how it's going to work out, but I'm going to leave that up to the fates. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I don't care how you get us there, Dan. Just get us to a Notre Dame-Alabama playoff matchup.
All right. I'm there. We have one last game to talk about briefly. We're going to go ahead and give you the Army-Navy pick for next week so we don't have to do a podcast.
Yeah, so we're off next week, folks.
We're off / don't feel like we need to devote our Tuesday nights in Hartford and Phoenix to talking about Army and Navy. Real quick, Navy's 3-9. Don't know what the spread is. Army's 9-3. Army, for no reason whatsoever. But we like to pick the game every year for fun. Because it's always on TV somehow.
It just depends on the line. I mean, it's always a close game. If the line is more than a touchdown, take the points. If Army's favored by 4.5, take Army.
Yes, it typically is always close because those teams are always close in talent.
Right. Oh, yeah, Navy's horrible this year.
But I think Army has the opportunity to smash their rivals. It's the one every 15-year chance they have to murder them, and I think they will. Give me Army, lay the points.
Okay, you're right. I'm on board. Army is a much better team. I forgot that Navy is, you know, much worse than their usual, even when they're ranked, you know, when they're 3-9 or 5-6 or whatever. They're still usually more talented than this. Also, Army's coach is, you know, one of those guys on a list to be going somewhere potentially. So maybe he'll head up to Syracuse after Dino departs.
Interesting.
Watch out. Syracuse, triple option.
Oh, boy.
If Syracuse went from,
oh boy,
like Paul Pasqualoni to, oh, by the way, Siri just turned on my iPhone when I said the word Syracuse, which is a problem for upstate New Yorkers.
It is. I never thought about that.
Anyway, if they went from like Paul Pasqualoni, who I had to fucking see on Thanksgiving on my TV, sitting there on the Lions sideline, causing me all sorts of PTSD, and then they go to like some of the horrible coaches they've had in the, you know, in the interim years, and then they go to Dino and that kind of style, and then they go to some, then they have to go back to like an option or some kind of pro style. What I'm saying is, like, Syracuse has come so far. Whoever, if Dino leaves, whoever they pick next, like, you can't go back. You have to get Kendall Briles. You have to get somebody who's, like, up-tempo, high-powered offense. You can never go back, never again, to the Pasqualoni years.
Their next coach is already determined. He was relieved of his duties yesterday
by the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's going to be
Nathaniel
Hackett, former assistant at Syracuse, followed Marone to the Bills and then followed him to the Jags. Hackett's got those Syracuse ties. He's going back.
Oh, no. You don't want
bad decision.
Bad decision for everybody.
It's been a serious, data-driven college football show. You guys have any lighter topics you'd want to discuss before we end?
Lighter topics. I'm trying to think about something I saw recently. I'm running out of... Okay, you know what? I'm going to give props to a chain restaurant. One of Ryan's favorites. I think he knows where I'm going with this. Del Taco. Now... For those on the East Coast who don't have Del Taco, let me explain the beauty of Del Taco compared to Taco Bell. This is actually a really good way to end the podcast.
Can you explain for us East Coasters what it is? Is it similar to Taco Bell? I've only heard it as like a punchline of jokes.
Absolutely, Tom. I'm going to go real deep in this. We got some time. So Del Taco is, in a way, kind of similar to Taco Bell. It's fast food, drive-through Mexican food. Similar soft tacos, hard tacos, quesadillas, roll-ups, huge menu. However, a couple things distinguish Del Taco from Taco Bell. And Ryan can add his two cents on this as well. But for me, first of all, they have a cheeseburger on the menu, which is random. I've never ate the cheeseburger, but it's value combo meal number 4, which I think is very funny. I pointed out to Ryan recently, and he's like, what the fuck is that? I've been in here 100 times, and I've never seen that up there. I'm like, it's hidden. There is a delicious cheeseburger up there. Second thing, they have French fries. And they have crinkle cut French fries. That's my personal favorite. Really crispy, always hot, easily the best fast food, drive-through, whatever, French fry is somehow Del Taco. And in my opinion, it's not really close. And that takes in consideration, you know, your In-N-Outs and Chick-fil-A and all that. And more importantly, they have, you know, other hits like mini shakes and churros and things like that. But their hours are great. And like this Thanksgiving, for instance, we, as my family, is a little strange, as you can guess by listening to me on the podcast, but we always eat late. It's always like 7:30, 8 o'clock. And look, I'm all about some sort of Thanksgiving tradition, but I'm not waiting till 8 o'clock to eat till 8 o'clock at night to eat. I'll get low blood sugar. I'll get cranky. I can't have that. So I made a snack and made lunch, and Ryan was like, oh, you're gonna have lunch today? I said, yeah, we're not gonna eat till late. Eat whatever you want. He's like, fantastic. I'm gonna go out and get something to eat. I said, dude, it's Thanksgiving. Bad news. I actually had to work in the morning, and I drove home, and I'm hungry myself. There was nothing open. I drove by McDonald's,
Burger King, Arby's,
Wendy's. Arby's, Burger King, Wendy's, they're all closed. He was like, oh, well, maybe I'll go to Circle K and get a donut or something, go to the gas station. 10 minutes later, Ryan comes home with 2 hot piping bags of Del Taco. He's like, fucking Del Taco. I was there, and I wasn't the only one in line. There was like 6 other cars. People know. It's way too long to wait till dinner. I'm like, see, it's perfect. And I'm like, how is it? He's like, it's great. These fries are hot, steaming out of the bag. He's got like, he's, you know, eating like, you know, fish tacos. Like, so anyway, Del Taco, thumbs up. I love it out here. I don't know if I'm just, you know, the fucking white kid out here eating fast food, Mexican, whatever. I don't care. It's good. And their fries are delicious, and I'm a big fan of most all their products. And I might go tonight after this podcast.
Yeah, either we're going to Dell or Sal's.
You know what? I'm going to send you a photo, Tom, in 15 minutes of us from Del Taco. You can put that on the website along with the Camel Cash photo that I found. Camel Cash is also
back. Oh, yeah, we got to talk about Camel Cash, because if quick. I just put that up as the photo, then that's going to be weird to people who...
Okay.
All right, so this is it, folks. TakeThePoints.net, iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. Thanks for listening. We're going to throw it to Dan and Ryan. I'm done. These two are going to end it.
We're talking about Camel Cash?
Wait, hang on. I want to just jump into this Del Taco conversation real quick.
We ain't done.
I feel like I was shortchanging this.
Just like a bag of Del Taco. We ain't done. We're going to the bottom. There's extra stuff down there.
Okay.
This is like the fake ending of a song, like when Closing Time by Semisonic hits that like long delay chord and you're like, oh, that's the end of the song. And then you're like, oh, fuck, there's like a minute and a half left.
Yep.
This will be like that, but not as bad, this I'm sure.
Well, no, sorry. I realized as I was making that analogy, that means I was comparing Ryan's statement to Closing Time. So I apologize. All for right. that.
That's fine. Okay. All just right. real quick. Want to just throw my additional two cents in on Del Taco. Three things. One, like Dan referenced, they have fish tacos there. Taco Bell does not have fish tacos. Del Taco does. That's big. Number two.
Hey, you don't know what's in Taco Bell's meat.
It could be fish. Good point.
Could be.
Maybe. Who knows? Amphibious rats. Two, Del Taco's refried beans are vegetarian. They do not use lard, so they're vegetarian friendly. That's important too. As a fast food consumer and a vegetarian, I like to have some options. It's really hard to eat fast food when you're vegetarian. Thank you, Del Taco. I can get a bean and cheese burrito to go, no issues. Three, when you go to Del Taco, whether it's in the store or even in the drive-thru window, they will tell you one specific piece of produce that day, where it was picked, what date it was picked, and who sliced it fresh that day. So I walk in and I'm like, oh, look at this. They got avocados. They came in from Puerto Vallarta 4 days ago, and they were cut by Rosa this morning. That's awesome. Tomatoes, limes, avocados. They good. Literally will tell you where they picked it from.
It's good for fast food.
What date?
That's great. I'm
everything. That's fantastic.
I'm laughing at the fact that they do that at a fast food restaurant. It's just it's funny. Farm to bag.
Farm to bag.
It's fantastic. So Del Taco, hats off. Dan's got me convinced. I was going to go for a slice of pizza, but now I want tacos.
No, we're going to Del Taco. So, but real quick, one last fun factoid about Del Taco is a lot of the Del Tacos where we live were former McDonald's. And you go in there and you're like, why does this feel weird? And you go, wait, I know. This was a McDonald's, and then you realize the colors are kind of the same and everything's the same. But the best part about operating in an old McDonald's is you get the old McDonald's playhouse for kids. Now you're thinking, how do they get around this liability? Well, here, I'm going to send you another photo, Tom. They have this fucking board up and it's like, welcome to the Dell Funhouse. And like written in Sharpie, it's like, please don't break your neck. Ask us about if you want extra sauce. Like, it's basically, that's all it says. And they cover their liability. And then, because that shit hasn't been changed out since like the 80s. It's the same plastic balls, like literally from like 1986. Very funny. Del Taco, just A+ comedy, produce, everything. Like, and by the way, I'm going to go there and get like three soft tacos tonight, a macho size fries. By the way, they call the size macho, which I really enjoy. They also have the, okay, hold on. I got one more thing. They have three
keep
sauces.
Going.
They have three sauces like Taco Bell. Del Scorcho's the real hot one, but they have one. It's called Delferno, and that's Delferno is the hot one, but Del Scorcho, I have a theory, is the inspiration for the song El Scorcho.
Yeah, that's what was going through my head.
And because I had a napkin one day just covering up the first letter over the packet, and it said El Scorcho in front of me, and I said, wait a minute. When Rivers moved from the East Coast in Connecticut out to the West Coast, was he a Del Taco writing El Scorcho? Very possible.
Guaranteed.
I think I cracked the case on this, and if I ever meet him, that's the only thing I'm going to ask.
Like, hi, Rivers responds to like everyone on Twitter, so you don't have to wait, Dan. You should just tweet at him and be like, hey, is El Scorcho inspired by the Del Scorcho?
I think it
makes sense. I mean, El Scorcho has nothing to do with, you know, Spanish language or heat.
No, it has nothing in the song. They don't say El Scorcho, just the opening line.
They say it in the beginning. El Scorcho. Ay, caray.
Yeah, that's it. But that's maybe because they were at Del Taco when he wrote that. So
maybe he met the unrequited love at Del Taco.
That's very possible. I'm so glad we talked about Del Taco, Tom. If you ever come out, we know where we're taking you for lunch right off the bat. It's going to cost like $6, too. It's going to be really good. It's cheap and to the point. All right, well, time to end the podcast. Got to go to Del Taco. Have a good night.
This is better than we did the greatest college football teams. We should just make this the, you know, next year, the greatest fast food chains. It has nothing to do with college football, but it would complete our transition from actual college football podcasts where we used to prepare and study to just us showing up 5 minutes before, talking about random nonsense for 90 minutes and then signing off. And then texting each other the next day, be like, shit, I should have made my lock of the week, you know, Utah Tech.
Wait, we didn't do locks.
Which we have to do, by the way.
Did all of us lose last week? I don't want to be hateful.
Oh, yeah. By the way, speaking of, nonsense, I prepared a song for this week's Lock of the Weeks that I didn't get to play. This is dedicated to you guys because I had, I had three teams I was going to pick, and it was Alabama, Auburn, I wasn't sure about. You know, that one ended up being somewhat close. Notre Dame, I was going to thinking about picking, and I did pick that one. They, of course, did not cover. And then the game I originally wanted to pick that you guys talked me out of, the Holy War, BYU up by 20 points and ended up covering. So this song's for you guys. I think the intro is longer than I anticipated, but it was Sabotage.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything to add, or should this just be the end of the show?
No, we still gotta pick live. All Sabotage, no picks.
All right. All Sabotage. Okay. Go ahead, Dan.
Ohio State.
All right. Well, that was going to be my pick. So, Ryan, why don't you go ahead and I will.
I think it was everybody's pick. We all know, guys, I'm in last place.
Speak for yourself. I'm keeping it home with the home team. I'm bringing it back. I'm sticking with my squad. UB, let's go Buffalo.
that was going to be my next pick. Jesus Christ. All right, well, I'm getting the runt of the litter. I am going to, trying to even think what's left. All right, fellas, I'm going out on a limb. I said I wasn't going to pick any small schools, but I'm going to go against my own wisdom. I'm picking Middle Tennessee State -2.5.
Ooh, dangerous game.
You should play Sabotage again for us booing you on the outro.
I'm not listening to you guys anymore.
Ooh.
Bill Clark, coming for your soul.
All right, Tom. All right. Going to Del Taco. See you in 2 weeks, America.
All right, two weeks, folks.
Hold on. Let me make sure. I want to make sure America knows when not to listen to us. Yeah, we'll record this about December 11th. The first bowl game, I believe, should be the 15th on Saturday. So sign up for your confidence pools. Sign up for all your pools. We'll be breaking down all the bowl games in detail, too. No just glossing after stuff. I promise. Names, players, full analysis.
If you haven't listened to this podcast before, if you're tuning in for the first time or the first year, the bowl spectacular is where we really earn our money, our $0 or our, you know, 20 bucks of camel cash. So
that's right. We've been, yeah, I love the bowl season and it's very,
we get into it.
Yeah. And I don't even want to talk about it cause I'll hold off. But anyway, time for Del Taco. Finally. Now I'm really hungry. Good night, everybody.